Hello, and welcome to this week's Making Passenger podcast. I'm Matt.
And I'm Tom.
This week we'll be talking to Alex Hornby, Chief Executive at Transdev. Transdev operate buses right across the north of England and have always had people at the heart of their agenda.
We want to find out more about the practicalities of how reduced capacity on board is being managed, and how the buses being cleaner than ever is giving passengers the confidence to return to using the buses again. Alex is a man who's been leading a team at the coalface for the last few months.
Hope you enjoy. Hi Alex, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you doing?
Morning Matt, great to be with you this morning and to chat some of the exciting things we're getting up to with Passenger.
What are we getting up to? Tom, anything exciting on our end?
Yeah, loads going on Matt. What did we do yesterday? We launched the first iteration of our enhanced vehicle asset piece into the Transdev Bus website. And yeah, that's going out. By the time everyone's listened to this, they'll be out into the wild, and everyone will be giving us lots of feedback on it. So we'll probably be on the seventh iteration by the time everyone's reading this one or listening to this one.
Yeah, quite possibly. I mean, that's the way things move in software. It's all quite fast, isn't it? So Alex, we wanted to get you on the podcast today because we wanted to chat a little bit. We've been working with you guys on some of this crowdedness stuff, and we wanted to chat a little bit about that. And we also wanted to talk about a few other things as well. But first off, I just kind of wanted to get a little bit of background because I'm sure people deep in the industry will understand how some of these things work. But for some people, perhaps at more of the fringe area, they won't necessarily understand how you guys are making decisions. So sort of where is the advice coming from right now, and how do you translate that decision into actionable events for your teams and your customers, your drivers, all your staff, that sort of stuff?
Sure. Well, yeah. Without being the first to use the word unprecedented in the on the podcast today, I think we are in unprecedented times, and I think we are moving at tremendous pace at the moment in terms of understanding what our customers want, what the market is that's out there, and what bus services are setting out to deliver at the moment. I think bus services in the UK, I think we are doing exactly the thing that certainly I get a kick out of from what the industry does, which is we're being a private enterprise and working in a deeply innovative and entrepreneurial fashion at the moment by nature of the speed we're working at. But also we are delivering a real essential public service, perhaps now more than ever. And so therefore the collaboration that we have with both national government and local authorities that we're dealing with is working at an exceptional level. And so in terms of how we're making decisions, we are being guided by national government. And to be fair, I think certainly from my perspective, we really welcome how much national government is listening to what the bus industry wants and therefore then creating guidance that we can work easily to. And then at more local level, we are creating networks that are the most appropriate for us to deliver in terms of the resources we've got available, and at the same time, making sure we're delivering all the essential services that people need. And so the work we're then doing with Passenger, I think, will only magnify and enable all that to be much easier for customers to understand and to get confidence back into bus travel at a time I think we most desperately need it.
Yeah, it sounds like a bit of a challenge at the moment, and you know, and we're seeing that all over. Out of everything you're doing at the moment, have there been any new learnings? Is there anything that you guys have picked up on and you think, right, this was completely unexpected, but we're going to take this forward. This is actually a positive outcome, and it's something we're going to maintain in our business.
Oh no, I mean absolutely. I mean, there's several things that you know. I mean, I'm a glass half full type of person anyway. So I think from this, I think from a purely sort of cultural level of bus operation, I think the role of bus drivers, I think, has been heightened because they've been seen as key workers. And I think that's something culturally we want to glass up and make sure we can continue that on an ongoing basis, because I think that improves the relevance and the attractiveness of the industry. But then I think from a customer perspective, it's also about cleanliness has become something that's much more important now. It's something that we've always believed in. I mean, we've long had cleaning happening during the working day where our customers can see buses being cleaned in between journeys. This is something I think even more so. Obviously, people are really, really keen that the places they go and the places they spend their time in are clean and hygienic. I think that is a great quality thing that we can, you know, all use this to take forward. And I think as well, the ability to plan services where capacity, in terms of capacity and in terms of where demand is, this is something that's quite critical at this time, because for some operators, resourcing can be precious at the moment. But at the same time, if we are to commit to the social distancing rules that the government is requiring us to, we must get capacity right, even more so than normal, because the last thing we want to do is to be leaving people at the side of the road. So therefore, you know, the work that we then, you know, are doing with passenger is really going to help with certainly those latter two points. And I'm sure we can discuss that as we go on.
Yeah, sure. You said before that the government's really listening to your industry and you're really grateful for that. Is there anything they're not listening to? Are you pushing them on areas that they're not responding to at all? Or are they just taking it all of your feedback and saying, that's great, we're going to action it? Or who's leading who?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to be nice here, you know, and to be fair, yeah. But overall, I will stand by that fact. Even if you ask me this question down the pub, hopefully when pubs open soon, you know, I will say the same thing, that, you know, I think the government overall, I think the response to the industry has been good. I think that the things that slightly frustrate us is some of the messaging has promoted the car and has said avoid public transport, whereas actually, I think some of it has become a little bit London-centric, and certainly to us out in the provinces and up north, we are still, you know, only carrying around, 15 to 20% of our normal loads of customers, and we have got the capacity to carry more, and we want more people to come back to us in a safe way. And so the overall messaging that was certainly being pumped out 2 or 3 weeks ago, what was, you know, in my view, was unhelpful. Because it made out that public transport wasn't safe, and we don't believe, you know, it is unsafe. So we think we can carry people and look after our customers in a perfectly safe way with the capacity and frequency and timetable provision that we have. And indeed, it will, you know, it's increasing now all the time. I think separately, some of the stuff around, you know, cycling and walking and active travel, I think again is great. If it gets more cars off the road, it improves our air quality. Fantastic, reduces congestion, all the kind of stuff that we believe in. But at the same time, we need buses to be in that same conversation. We can't have it as a separate conversation of let's just sort out walking, cycling, and let buses sort of carry on. I'm really impressed with some of the work that we see going on about how that is being integrated. And we know some of the work that you guys have done already of integrating cycling provision with buses, exactly the right kind of stuff. And I think that's all we want, is we don't want public transport being isolated away from these conversations, because if we are starting to replan our towns and cities for walking and cycling, let's replan them for public transport too, because in a matter of days, literally, I'm sure once this podcast comes out, you know, the frequencies and all that will all be there. So I think we would have welcomed a bit more help in terms of promoting the positives of what public transport is offering now and what it will soon be able to offer in the future as social distancing eases.
So Alex, with the pace of change at the moment, I mean, things are moving at a lightning speed for kind of everyone involved in scaling the operations back up, the technology side, the driver rostering, the network scheduling and all those kinds of things. You sort of mentioned the amount of the work that's being done in those areas is much more intense than it usually is. One thing that struck us is that we're in a really privileged position to with the trust that you place in us to deliver these things on the software side. But when things are moving so quickly, sometimes, you know, the communication is less than perhaps it would be normally under normal circumstances. So I was kind of curious to know how that feels for you guys, where you've got things that are potentially being sort of pushed out to the customer, perhaps hours after you've seen it yourself. You know, things are really, really, really quick, and that places a lot of trust in the teams. So, yeah, I was wondering if you had any kind of thoughts about how that feels.
We do trust you guys. I mean, you know, we trust you. Our customers trust and really value the work that you do. You know, you can see that in the scores, you know, the operating store scores. You know, people do trust that. And I think It's a team effort as well, isn't it? I mean, we do our best to get the data right quickly. We do our best to get that to you, and then that is uploaded in a way that the customer then, you know, can then use it and trust it. And they must trust it, because look at how much they value our app and value our website. I mean, that's there for everyone to see. So yeah, I mean, I think, you know, that work is immensely valued, and I think we, you know, it's evident of the nature of the collaboration that we have with you, that you know, we accept our bit of the bargain is to get the data right, and then you accept your bit as to how you translate that in a way that not just is correct for the customer, but is in a manner that the customer can use it and trust it very quickly. Because I think, you know, we've all seen ways in which customers are given correct information, but the manner in which it's presented can be so awful that they don't trust it, or it's not updated, or all the sorts of things that can happen. But I think, you know, what we've built up with Passenger and with you guys is that, you know, we work hard to get the data right quickly, and you work hard to regurgitate it, and sorry, that's a horrible word, isn't it? But I mean it in the best way possible.
Present it beautifully.
To present it beautifully. Yeah, that's better. Thanks, Tom. In a way that customers, you know, and I don't think they trust it. I mean, trust obviously is a big word, but I don't think they just trust what they do in terms of how they use our app. I mean, I think they like it. I think they love it. You know, I think, I think we go even beyond trust in a way. And we've certainly got advocacy, and advocacy is the ultimate, isn't it? So
absolutely.
So in terms of what we then do next, in terms of crowdfunded information, I mean, now that relationship becomes a three-way, doesn't it? In terms of hopefully how we've, you know, what we are due to determine to get it right, because we're really motivated by the customer getting it right. You really join in that party to present it in the way that you help us to, and then the customer then inputting as well. I mean, it's perfect, isn't it?
You're right. I think the customer actually contributing, I don't think customers would really care as much if they weren't already advocates for what we're doing. I think, you know, if they're bought in, then they're sort of like, yeah, you know, we will contribute. And I suppose that's a really nice way to think about it, in terms of, you know, we've all got collectively, you know, through the data and the presentation of that data and all the hard work that's gone in over the last couple of years, to a point where, you know, the customer feels like they are part of it and able to contribute to adding data, inputting data that doesn't necessarily exist in a system. So, you know, so that natural kind of requirement to go out to all the human brains sitting on a bus or standing at a bus stop and say, well, you know, what does it look like from where you're sitting? That gives us an ability to sort of, you know, communicate to other passengers whether there is space on the bus or that kind of thing. So, but you're right, it comes down to people wanting to do that and feeling like they have some kind of ownership of it in order to actually be bothered to do it in the first place. So, yeah,
and I think we really hope that, you know, they see that valuableness quite straight, you know, instantly. It's not as if we're asking them for something that they won't in turn and see value of. I mean, this is not a, I mean, yeah, we really value the power of market research and all stuff like that, but we know sometimes you can't always get everybody to contribute that because they can't quite see what's in it for them. But I think with this, straight away they can do, because they'll be sitting on a bus, they'll be able to give a view of what they think about how busy it is. And then if they can contribute to that and then know that they will then in turn benefit from it, then yeah, hopefully we can really nail it.
So let's talk a little bit about your vehicles and your systems at the moment. Can you tell us a little bit about the practicalities, the amount of cleaning, the extra effort that you're putting in above your normal service that you're doing right now, and also how well that's been received by your customers, or whether it's passed without comment?
So yeah, I mean, there's a tremendous amount of effort being put in, and as well, you know, we're doing that with in some ways less people, and people working harder, and people really embracing, you know, the mission we're on at the moment in terms of delivering services to people at a critical time. So yeah, you know, as I mentioned before, you know, we're quite proud of how we present our vehicles, and we present, you know, the nature of service to customers. You know, we've got an intense cleaning regime as we prepare buses for service, to, you know, for the next day, for its day in service. We've heightened that with, you know, stronger use of disinfectants, stronger touch point cleaning, as we would say, where customers are in contact with services on the bus. And we've also introduced an antiviral mist that is a process that takes place on every single bus each evening. which gets to all the places that obviously you can't normally reach with traditional cleaning methods. And so you know, these are all things that are above and beyond what we normally do. But I imagine these are things that will now stay with us. You mentioned before about lessons that we carry on. I think anything that makes buses cleaner, you know, is a good thing. And so, you know, we welcome the fact that that's motivated us, I guess, to make our clean standards even higher than what they were. And then during the day, you know, I mentioned before, you know, we've long, you know, employed cleaners in bus stations to clean buses in between journeys. And I think from our point of view, we've done that because we want the bus to be clean, but we would do that as well so the customer can see us cleaning the buses. We almost see it as a bit of a show. We brand up our cleaners and their kit, and we, you know, say, look, you know, we train them to talk to customers and say, just hang on, you know, just wait there a second, I'm just going to clean your bus for you. And so all that, you know, we've now, you know, I think we've tripled that resource that we've got out there, and we've added it in more locations. So, you know, you've got buses out there now that are probably being cleaned, you know, 3 or 4 times during the day as well as then at night, because they're seeing all these points where we've got cleaning teams waiting to jump on the bus and clean them. So I think that from a cleaning perspective, there's all that thing that is going on. And then in terms of vehicles, yeah, I'm not a fan of putting yellow and black crime scene tape over there. I think I've said that far too many times now, so that's becoming a bit of a cliche, I think, now. But yeah, you know, I hate the idea of buses being seen as dangerous places. Yeah, yes, we've got to get across some really important safety information now, and we've got to guide people, because there are people who've been away from buses for months that you know, now want to come back. So people will want to be guided. You know, they think it's a mad and different world. But the communications we're putting out there is actually, it isn't mad and different. You've just got to be a little bit more aware of one or two things when you're traveling. And we've done that in our typical upbeat, positive, graphical style that is not full of dangerous and warning signs everywhere. It's more about things that you should do and things rather than things that you shouldn't do. And it's done in a way that matches our, as I say, our upbeat brand style. And it is more just things like, you know, take a look when you're on the bus and make sure, you know, you're sitting in a place that you've got space around you. We haven't gone for the manner of blocking off seats all over the bus. Yes, we have, you know, we've closed seats that are close to the driver, and we've closed seats where people are facing each other. But quite frankly, these were seats that people didn't like to sit on anyway. So you know, and they're the kind of seats that we try not to specify when we build new buses. You know, we believe, you know, in forward facing seats because people like to face forward and look out of windows. We don't like seats on buses that face each other because people don't like to face each other and have their knees knocking into each other. Even more so now, you know, that's not seen as the best thing in terms of, you know, people being close to each other. So again, there's another lesson that hopefully we can learn from. You know, we've always believed in spreading seats out and giving maximum leg room. You know, so, okay, it's more, you know, that's more about centimetres than 2 metres apart. But it's just this kind of thing about people want personal space on buses. And that's one thing we do anyway, you know, on our big services like the 36, you know, the vehicles there have seats that, you know, I often say they're designed so you don't realise there's someone sitting next to you because they're so well spaced out, you know, with a 2+1 seating arrangement. So people can spread out rather than the traditional industry approach of 2+2. And on those buses, for an example, you know, we seat only 63 people in a double-decker bus, whereas on a traditional London bus, you know, you're looking at, you know, over 70, and in some of the provinces, you're looking at over 80. And so if this motivates the industry to get out of this idea of cramming people on and this idea of spacing people out more and giving people more comfortable journeys, then hopefully that's another useful lesson from it. But, you know, it's something we believe in. You know, we talk to our customers, and particularly to get modal shift, they really want as much personal space as possible. And again, that does feed into some of the exercises that everyone is doing now.
So just to loop back to what you were saying at the beginning there about the increase in cleaning, if you're going to carry that moving forwards, it's obviously that's 3 or 4 times more than you were necessarily doing back before. How are you going to manage to fund that? Is the government talking about potentially continuing to fund you guys for a little bit longer to allow some kind of confidence from the public that these services will continue to be cleaned and it doesn't just stop when suddenly the industry opens again? Or are you left to fund that yourself? Or you don't know yet?
Well, yeah, in short, we don't know. But I think from our point of view, it's something that we see as a necessary. If we're going to get confidence back into bus travel, you know, I cannot. We will not just cut that cleaning off. In 6 months or whatever, once the funding stops. We believe that's now a prerequisite for what our customers expect from us. And therefore, if we want to grow customer numbers back up to the levels they once were, or hopefully beyond, you know, let's try and be a bit ambitious, you know, and let's look at this long term. These are the kind of things we're gonna have to do. So it now becomes part of our it may therefore become part of our cost base. And that's, that's a challenge in terms of where does that cost come from? How do we justify it? But that's certainly something that we just now see as a necessary, because that's what customers want at the moment. There may be some things that we do that they want less of. You know, that could be one, you know, potential business opportunity. But, you know, I've always believed in a package. Customers want a package of things, and I'm not interested in deleting one and hoping that therefore they stay. I'd rather say this is the investment in a package of things, you know, friendly driver, buses being on time, great technology to support it from you guys, you know, comfortable seating, you know, all the stuff that we need, you know, cleanliness, which was always up there in terms of their aims. But it is a package, and what we need to do is get that package right, so we then grow. And every time we have done a service that has those packaged, we've got that growth, and therefore I've always said, well, it's justified it. So I don't want to try and do a project or initiative next that deletes something out of the package, because I don't want to risk only getting 5% growth instead of the 10% growth we got last time. You know, I'm not interested in that. I think we just see this now as part of the new package of what customers want from their services, and we will carry on doing research with them to make sure we're getting it right and we're emphasising it all in the right places.
Brilliant. Well, I suppose that moves on to then, I mean, what's your hope for the potential outcome of like the next 3 or 6 months? Like, things are going to start to open up, okay? And so in the next 3 to 6 months, how do you see the best outcome for Transdev or the bus industry as a whole? What are you looking to implement to help people return back?
I think the social distancing issue is a problem, and that is something that will create a barrier to growth. And I think that's in terms of both perception and also, you know, our also ability to deliver that growth, because at the moment social distancing rules are stating that, you know, in a double decker bus that can normally seat, you know, 60, 70 people, you're lucky if you're going to get more than sort of 20, 25 on. So that's a problem in itself in terms of, if the growth does come, how do we accommodate that quickly and easily with the resources that we've got? So I think that's a challenge. And then, so I think that's something we're looking at very carefully. But I think, you know, as things open up, the research that we've done with our customers here, and we've got a sample of over 600 people, so, you know, we haven't just interviewed the diehards or, you know, the enthusiasts. You know, we've got a great cross-section of people. And we want those people that are mentioned in it as well, because they're our customers. But in that, you know, we're only seeing around a 10% drop-off of people who are saying, you know, I'm not too sure if I'm going to return to the bus after this, because I'm unsure about cleaning and a few other things, you know. And I think this is, and you know, when we've studied what they've said, this is all perception based. It's not reality based, because people are sitting at homes and they're not, you know, they're not able to see what's going on in the world at the moment. In some ways, you know how buses are lightly loaded now and how they're clean and safe and all the things that I keep on going on about. But the fact that, you know, our research is saying only a 10% drop off, that to me says, well, if we only really need to convince them, then we don't seem to have as tough a job, perhaps, as what some of the national stats are saying. Now, you know, we will look at everything. We'll look at all the information we're getting and all the sort of stats that are being produced. But it's really interesting that some of the local stuff, and I know we're not the only ones to quote, you know, a 10%-ish drop-off once this is all over. So I know I'm not in a dream world here, but I don't think it will be as bad as it is. Once other normal life is enabled, and once retail is enabled, and leisure and hospitality and workplaces, I mean, I am not expecting the reductions that are being quoted nationally, which is anything up to, you know, 70, 80%. You know, I don't see that happening. It took us, you know, days or even, you know, a week or so. We lagged behind some of the drop-offs that we saw in the bigger cities, because I think where we are, there is still a lot of traditional industry. I think there's still a lot of, you know, I hate to say traditional industry, but there's still a lot of it's more sort of smaller industry. There's more manual labor. There's less office-based work. And I think people will demand to want to be sociable with each other again. I don't think as many people will be wanting to talk at screens as much as what other people are saying. Yes, I can see, you know, big companies, small companies for that matter, you know, wanting to get out of expensive city rents and things like that and find we can do business other way. But are people really going to want to work from home for the rest of their lives talking to screens? I don't think so. And I don't think we will see that in the towns and areas that we're serving. So I think that, you know, once people are convinced it's safe, and that perception is something that is overcome. I think, you know, we expect bus travel to join in those sort of more positive realities of where everything else in our everyday lives will get to.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. But if I could just take you back to something that you said at the beginning, where you talked about the government's message of don't use public transport, there's always going to be people that were on the fence before. And do you worry that that may now have permanently, perhaps for even a generation, sway those people to not give up the car? You know, you've got the people that will have to use the bus because that was their only method of transport. And you had people that used it occasionally that might use it less now and maybe use a bike. And you had people that were thinking, well, maybe I can get to work using buses. There are more regular buses and stuff. And they've just been told, do not use. You know, how do we undo that bit? And are you worried about what that might have done?
What we found quite interesting was that the Sunday or with the Monday, whatever day it was, that Boris Johnson said, don't use public transport. We saw a 10% increase in usage in Blackburn.
Yes, go public, who just want to rally against the government any way they can.
And so, yeah, it was only a 10% increase. But bear in mind, this was a few weeks ago now when there was even less things to do. And so it was interesting that, you know, that call was put out. And the instant response from the people of Blackburn is that they should go and use buses, which was quite interesting. But yeah, I think you're right. You know, there's a few people who we're going to have to work even harder at. But you've got to remember as well, a huge part of our audience and our customer base are people that haven't got a choice. You know, they're people that haven't got access to other transport modes and quite frankly don't want other access to transport modes. They don't have cars, don't want cars, they use the bus. The other really interesting fact is that we have in Harrogate is 55% of our customers have access to a car but use the bus. And okay, you could say, well, are they going to be thrown back on the fence now because of this messaging? But again, glass half full time, you know, we've worked really hard to get them and they walk past their car every day to get on a bus. Is a message from the Prime Minister saying don't use the bus, is that going to be the thing that turns them when they're walking past their car every day? And these people are people, you know, that, you know, they're walking past two cars on their driveway, you know what I mean? They're not people that are saying, oh, I think I better save the pennies on my petrol. Yes, there are people who are doing that, and buses will always be better value than saying a car. Our research amongst even car users says that. But you think, well, if they are making such strong decisions in the face of all that, you know, how much of this will put them off in the long term? You know, in the short term, yeah, I think, you know, we're going to have to work really, really hard to get levels back. But I think in terms of the perception, you know, the how people form their opinions to make that choice, you know, they've already made huge decisions for much, you know, and put much more things at stake in terms of, you know, buying a car and leaving it on the driveway to use a bus. And I think that if they can get over that hurdle, you know, I'm sure we can get them over this hurdle.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, or at least I like to hope that you're right.
It is really interesting to hear how a blanket message from central government is interpreted in different parts of the country. And I think, you know, what I'm hearing is that you interpret what you're hearing and you adjust it for what you know in terms of your customer base. You know, you know your customer, and just, you know, reinforcing all of what the government are saying isn't necessarily exactly what the reality is on the ground.
No, indeed. I mean, and I was quoted in the press here in Harrogate 2 weeks ago, you know, again, very upbeat, saying, you know, 90% of people will come back. And it was interspersed within an interview about something completely different. And of course, the headline they chose was, you know, Harrogate bus boss says 90% of you are going to all come back to the bus, you know, almost like accusing the population. I thought, oh God, here we go. And so I was waiting for all the comments, you know, on social media saying, is this crackpot, you know. But actually, we didn't get that. It was a really neutral response. And of course, now more than ever is the time when people are sitting at homes and can't wait to sort of have a pop of people on social media and stuff. But yeah, so it was quite an interesting test of that. Because again, you know, Harrogate is, you know, one of the towns that we serve, you know, is a fairly, you know, lovely people, quite well-to-do area in some respects. And so you think if you can, I've always said Harrogate's the kind of town that shouldn't be a great place to run buses and a successful place to run buses, but it is. And it's all because we talk to our customers, see what we want, and we give them it. And they want, you know, they want things like the 36, and they don't even say bus, they say the 36. You know, it's a real badge of honour for them. You know, always believe, you know, ask customers what they want and give them it, and they'll probably want to buy it. You know, it's as simple as that.
Yeah, I mean, that seems like retail 101. It's struggling to see how many people get that wrong, though, isn't it?
One thing that I thought was really nice about listening to you, Alex, and that was the way you described Transdev. I think, you know, if Transdev was a person, how would you describe it?
Oh, God. I've got to be careful now because I belong to, you know, we belong to quite a global family, so I've got to be quite careful how I would describe Transdev.
It was great to hear you light up when you were talking about it, though. There's clearly a lot of passion in what you're doing, and that's you know, that comes across on your social media and all your kind of, you know, the way you talk about the company and the way you talk about the team, which I think is a great inspiration to a lot of people. And I think when people are looking for guidance at pace, you know, I think the sort of the government might be setting out requirements, but I think, as I kind of alluded to, the interpretation of that comes down to passion and drive, and I think, you know, real experience. And I think that's something that certainly came out when you were talking about it. So yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, I love my job. You know that, and I say that to my boss too often, which probably doesn't get me much money because he thinks I love the job, so that's fine. But no, I mean, I do. I love everything about what we do. You know, I love getting up in the morning and coming to work. You know, I just do. And whether that makes me sad, mad, or whatever, I don't know. But yeah. But no, you know, and you know, we genuinely, you know, the bus business is about people, and you know, I do genuinely love the people that we work with as well, because you know, they believe in what we believe in, and so they help make it happen. And again, that might sound really cliche, but it's just something that it just works. So you know, we like that, and we can't do anything without our people to make that happen. And we have to believe in that, and we believe in talking to our customers and talking to our colleagues to the same level of quality and putting the same level of commitment into that, because that's what makes it happen. In terms of Transdev, I mean, again, I love working at Transdev because I think we do have the best of both worlds. We've got real autonomy to operate locally and to make local decisions, and Transdev trust us to do that. And we are not a typical Transdev business. You know, we are predominantly a B2C, mm-hmm. customer gets on bus, and we are motivated to deliver the best service we can to our customers to make them come back to us every day, and that's where we get our income from. Whereas the majority of Transdev across the world is about delivering often contracted, you know, franchise-type services all over the world. But I think, and while that sounds a bit weird in the way you could say, well, they're two totally different business models, but actually Transdev's ethos is we just do what is right locally, and what the locality says we should deliver, we deliver it, and we employ people who are really motivated to deliver at a high standard locally to do it. So that's how that works. And indeed, you know, what's great about being in the group is that, you know, because we've got freedom in our deregulated environment to do innovation and to be entrepreneurial and to be, you know, market-led and customer-led, it means that then when we're then in a situation when we're bidding for things that are, you know, government-controlled or whatever way you want to call it, they can point to us and say, well, look, you know, Transdev have the ability and understand this over here, which isn't something you might have wanted, but look, it's happened over here and it's delivering. And you know, the app that we do with you guys, I mean, we show that off all the time to everybody. And we, you know, when we are told, you know, often sometimes at group, you know, they want to get best practice and, hey, why don't we all look at using this app that's made over there? And then when we say, well, look at this one, this is better, they leave us alone. But, you know, and I'm not saying that to scoff at them. Again, it's just because they just genuinely believe, well, if that's the right solution for you locally, then go and use it. And so that really motivates us because we've got a real sense of achievement to deliver what is the local decision. We can see the results of our efforts locally. We can enjoy the results of our efforts locally. But then we've got the support of a group that isn't just there to, you know, financially support us, but actually are good cheerleaders to what we do as well because they believe in what we're doing.
Certainly sounds like you've got the right level of support above you. So that's really great to hear, because I suggest that's probably going to make sure that you guys come out of this and do hit some of those optimistic numbers that perhaps you're looking for. Alex, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate you taking the time.
Great to speak to you guys as well as ever.
Next week, we'll be talking to members of the passenger team. We wanted to give some insight into the challenges of delivering features at pace. More specifically, we'll be talking about enhanced vehicle information and capacity planning, a hot topic as people are beginning to make their way back to public transport. If you have any questions for us, then please get in contact via Twitter @makingpassenger. Until next time.